So we right here with the Prince of the Bay, Mr. FAB, right here on WCNN.com. What up, Fabby?
Man, I'm just chilling, man. It's my birthday week, so, man, I had a long night last night, but you know, it's all good. I'm trying to party like it's 1999.
Okay. And, you know, although we've been reporting on you for a long time, you know, ever since Nig Ladin dropped and shit, this is the first time, you know, we catch up for an in-depth interview. So just go ahead and, you know, give everybody a brief introduction. Let us know, you know, what you represent and what you're here to do.
Well, you know, first of all, the name is Mr. Fab. Like you said, man, I've been on the grind since I was like 17, 18. I just turned 25, man, so that's about good 7-year run. I just putting in and just working hard. Trying to push, generated a nice little buzz right now in the Bay Area for myself and for a lot of other cats in the Bay, man, just trying to be that voice of the people. Besides that, man, I'm just been on the grind, man, just recently signed a distribution, a little label deal, like, through Atlantic Records, give me some nationwide recognition, and besides that, just trying to put things together. And just make good music, man, that the world gonna feel.
Okay, man. So, you know, you're repping this Bay movement and Thiz. So what's your affiliation with Thiz?
Thiz is just like my home, man. You know, that's my home umbrella. They gave me an opportunity when Lodcats had slept on me. Mac Dre really opened up the door for me, man, to really, for people to know who I am on the whole Bay Area level as far as just getting my buzz up and people knowing people had knew who I was, but I wasn't affiliated with a team, so you know people really kind of be hesitant to show love to like the nomads of the game when you ain't really with no team, if you got to be with a clique. And we just clicked up, man, and it was a beautiful thing, man. Unfortunately, Dre died in 2004, and somebody had to keep and continue the legacy going on with the whole Thiz movement. And that's what it is, man. I'm just keeping the legacy going with our whole movement. And anybody that's not familiar with Thiz is like, we have a movement similar to like Dipset, as far as just our following. We got a strong fan base. We got like a cult following, man, that support us anything we do and everywhere we go. And that's our label. And we just trying to keep it going, man. So I'm definitely a direct affiliate of Thiz Entertainment.
All right. Tell us about the whole, you know, Yellow Bus driver thing and the concept around it.
The whole Yellow Bus movement thing, what it started off was, just a rhyme, right? I was like, I do the dummy retarded to ride the Yellow Bus. And it was crazy because I honestly didn't think that it would receive as much attention as it did. Which was crazy because I just was like, man, you know, it is what it is. I said it in a rhyme. But what it did, it turned around into like a movement, like the whole Yellow Bus movement, man. In the Bay Area, we have a genre of music just like Go Stupid, Get Hyphy. And I was like, you know, you can't go no dumber than riding a Yellow Bus. So when I said that, everybody just was like, oh, yeah, I ride the Yellow Bus too. I ride the Yellow Bus. And so we had just started a real movement. And if you look at the MySpaces and all that stuff, you just see the Yellow Buses everywhere. And that just spawned off from a verse that I said. And now it's really like a movement. People saying they doing the whole, they ride the Yellow Bus and just going completely ignorant. But it's crazy to be responsible for that because you're like, damn, I never knew that it would do this. Like, you know, I didn't think that people from all walks of life would be like, yeah, I like the Yellow Bus too.
I feel you. And you recently got signed to Atlantic Records. Can you break down how you got signed? You know, what made you pick Atlantic Records?
I think Atlantic Records showed the most interest, man. I was on like a bid war for like 7 months, right? And people were saying they wanted to sign me, and I was flying out taking meetings with every damn president I know of all these labels. It just really wasn't like the movement that I really see myself going with. I was like,
bless you.
Thank you. I was like, man, shit.
Bless you.
Damn. I was like, a lot of these labels, man, they just be, some people, it's greed, and then some people is like, you just cause you know you own, and they don't want nobody else to have you. It's just like, remember when you was little and you have some toys, and somebody come over your house, and the toy that you've never played with ever, they'll pick up and start playing with it, and you'll be like, man, give me my toy, man. He'd be like, well, you wasn't even playing with that toy. You just wanted it because I got it.
I feel you.
That's how a lot of labels were. They just wanted you because everybody else wanted you. They really didn't have no main interest in me. But I think that Atlantic took interest as far as saying, okay, this is the music. We like you. We want to come out. We want to fly to some of your shows. And that's all it is, man. It's a beautiful thing, man, because they show interest. And what we're doing is, it's just basically, I went over there because I was like, okay, they interested, they know who I am, they just didn't go to my MySpace page and see, hear some of my music and say they want to sign me. So I went over there, good relationship, and that's what it's about, man. You got to go where people want to kick. People want to be with you. Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, your single, Ghost Rider, you know, been creating a buzz. I heard the video is going to be MTV Gem of the Week.
Yeah, that video start playing Monday, man, which is so crazy because they've been like showing the commercial on MTV Jams and MTV 2 on the Unleashed part. They've been showing that commercial, man. So it's like real crazy. Like, you know, I came to the house the other day and I just caught the commercial on the fluke. It was like, damn. it was like, you know, I'm on MTV. So just to catch myself on that commercial, man, that's crazy, man. It's still, this whole thing, man, is still like overwhelming sometimes, man. Because I look back at myself and I'd be like, damn, just a couple of years ago, I was dreaming about this, you know? And I never thought, I mean, I thought it would be to a level of a possibility because I wouldn't have went out my ways to, you know, make them my dreams. But just for this thing to just be happening, like, man, I done been around the world, man, and not even at my wildest dreams at 14, 15, would I think that I would be able to go to England and go to off music, you know?
I feel
and,
you.
That's just crazy, man, so.
You gotta keep at it, though.
Yeah, you just, and once you start reaching goals, man, it's like steps. You just continue to broaden your dreams, and that's all I'm doing. I'm just broadening my dreams. Like, you know, okay, I got this, I made that possible, all right, well, let me go to the next level. So I'm just trying to keep taking the steps up, man.
Okay.
Staying humble, staying, you know, realizing that it's a blessing.
What did you think the first time you heard that beat with the whole Ghostbusters theme and everything?
I actually told my dude, Shanti, who was responsible for making that beat, who's one of the ultimate producer. I love that guy.
He's been around for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. If anybody follows Bay Area music, this guy has definitely been a pioneer as far as making the Bay Area what it is. He's been a part of the original movement, and now he's with this whole new movement. I actually gave him the idea. I was like, bro, you should do the Ghostbusters beat. And he was like, what? He was like, the Ghostbusters beat? I'm like, bro, do it. This shit's going to be crazy. And he did it, and man, we sat back and we joked about it and we laughed about it. But we did the song, and when we did it, we thought it would just be something that, you know, the kids would just want to hear and just love, and, you know, and we moved on to it. We didn't put that much effort into it to be like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a smasher. This is going to be on Hannity and Combs. And I never knew that, man. And it's just crazy because it's been getting so much buzz, so much just out of the whole movement, nobody cares about nothing else we're doing. Everywhere I go, everybody's like, what the hell is Ghost Ride?
We're about to get to that.
That's all people want to know about. They're like, I don't care about nothing else out of this movement. No Ghost Stupid, no none of that. Just what the hell is the Ghost Ride thing?
You know, I recently saw you on a TV interview speaking about the whole Ghost Riding thing, and they were kind of going hard on you, man, but, you know, you were kind of trying to, you know, handle yourself and everything. Tell us about that.
What it is, man, anytime you do something that starts to gain not only nationwide recognition, but worldwide recognition, and people see you as far as they want to make you a sacrificial lamb. As well as when you have something that has penetrated pop culture and is taking over other neighborhoods and other areas, they like, man, hold on, this becomes a threat. Nobody, you know, like in the 70s when they was making all the feel-good music and it was good, the blacks, okay, that's what the blacks want to do, they good. It's when white people start doing it, they like, wait a minute, they're killing our culture. So it's gotten so big that these people, these rich Republicans and their kids is doing it. But they like, man, what are you doing? What's going on? We can't take this. We can't take this. So they get ecstatic about their kids doing it and they coming home and their kids dancing on top of their cars. So they want to, you know, they want to try to stop it whenever they can. But you can't stop something that becomes a movement, man. Once it's called a tsunami, it's going to keep going. It's a tsunami wave. And, like, I love the opportunity because what they really didn't realize is they put me on to a whole different market. Like, it was people that never even heard of Ghost Riding, but when they did that on Hannity and Cole on the news, that put me on to a whole other fan base, you know?
That's what I was about to say that, man. They were stupid because, you know, they were trying to blame the whole thing on you. Like it's just you, but at the same time, by doing that, they blew you up.
Man, they blew me up. Man, that put me on to... Because what they do, they start asking their kids, what is this Ghost Riding? They be like, Dad, you don't know what a Ghost Riding is? Let me see your keys. they really just blew me up and didn't even know that they did it. That interview then led to so many other interviews, some good, some not so good. But at the end of the day, when you push in a record, publicity is everything. And as a business person, not only as an artist, because I own my own company and I'm my own president, so I'm a businessman. As a businessman, you just want people talking about your business, regardless if they say, man, there'd be roaches over at that restaurant or that food good. Regardless, what you're doing is you're creating conversation. And anytime conversation happens, controversy sells, and people don't understand that.
I feel you. So, you know, this ain't no Republican corporate TV station, so go ahead and, you know, let us know about the Ghost Riding thing and, you know, the negative parts about it, too, because we know there are negative parts about it.
Well, the whole Ghost Riding thing is, like I said, I'm an artist, and I paint what's going on in my culture. My culture right now, we have this craze. We just, you know, we're definitely doing things, man, for... the negative things come from lack of attention. They come from a need to be seen. They come from a need to be heard, because in my community right now, not only the Bay Area, but as far as in Oakland, where I'm from, the city of Oakland, they closed 8 schools down this year, so the kids don't have nowhere to go to school. If they go to school, they go to school with rivalry gangs, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and it's not necessarily gangs like Bloods and Crips, but I'm talking about like street gangs, blacks. They go to school, they deal with that. So you have young kids who are in school environments who don't have, you know, they don't feel safe in school, so they go to school with guns, they doing stuff like this. They don't have no recreation, no after-school programs, no youth centers. It's one youth center in the whole city of Oakland. You know what I'm saying? In the whole city, it's no youth centers. It's nothing. So basically what I'm saying is there's no opportunity. There's nothing for the kids to do. So what they do, they create their own recreation. They create their own opportunity, and by doing that, they do whatever they do to gain attention. So they have sideshows. Sideshows is like just car finales where people just come up and come party and come dance and play their music. At the sideshow, they ghost ride their cars just so they can be seen. They get new cars and they want to feel like, you know, y'all ain't looking at me, well, look at me now. And the whole ghost ride thing, it's just like a car stunt. Now, I'm not saying that it's the best thing to do. I'm not saying that it's the safest thing to do, but if it was done inside of a controlled environment, it would be definitely a lucrative thing for not only the city, but for the people that's doing it. And what I mean by that is, as I reiterated earlier when I was on that show, when cowboys first started riding bulls, people thought they was out their mind. You know what I'm saying? They were like, y'all riding bulls, y'all gonna kill yourself. What's going on with that? As soon as they start putting it in a control environment, you have one of the biggest events, America's favorite pastime, the rodeo. They create these things, you know what I'm saying? And anytime you have something that America loves, that means that it's lucrative because they're going to keep playing. They're going to keep doing that. And that's all the Ghost Ride is. You got NASCAR. It's urban drifting. You got all these things that they've given the opportunity. ability to see what they would be like if they was in controlled environments. And they haven't gave this opportunity for this whole little sideshow and stuff that we do in the Bay. Nobody. They trying to stop it before you even see how could you help it. Because if you try to stop it and you know you can't stop it, you know what that does? That only makes people want to do it even more. When your parents told you don't do something when you was young, you always was like, I'm still going to do this. You never cared. You was, whether you did it in their presence or you did it when they wasn't around. But when they gave you an opportunity to do something, and you was like, oh, I could do it. It ain't no risk. I really ain't going to even do it.
I feel you. And, you know, I want to talk to you about the recent explosion of ecstasy in hip-hop, especially in the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's drugs, period, you know. A lot of people use drugs, man, to escape the hardships of reality that they go through. You know, when you see a kid, man, who's 13, 14, and his dad's in jail or his dad's dead or he don't know his dad, his mom's just running around like a head cut off, not really realizing that she has a baby to raise. And this kid is frustrated. This kid is, he's going through a lot of things, man. They're stressed out. And they see drugs as an outlet to make them feel like they don't have to deal with the reality of what they go through. And not once do I say that this is the right thing to do. Not once do I feel compassionate about a kid using drugs. Because, I mean, it's just not cool. No way how you look at it, it just ain't cool. But when you look at what these kids go through in their lives, and it's like, damn, they don't got nothing else in their life to do. They need some type of feeling of relief to get them away from the reality of what they look at. When I was young, I could only say the reasons why I smoked weed, the reasons why I got drunk. And it was because my mom was on drugs and my dad had died from AIDS. And I was just going through a lot of stuff. I was frustrated. I didn't have nobody to talk to. And so I would get high to just try to somebody forget for a minute, you know? And it's unfortunate, man, and it's sad because it's like people see drugs as a way to escape. But really, you're making yourself worse, man. And I didn't realize that until I got older. You don't do nothing but make yourself worse. You make it hard for yourself because You look at things from a cloudy view when you high, and then when you sober, you back to how things were. So anyway, you're not looking at a reality of what's really going on when you high. Then what's really going on when you're not high is really making you get more high. So it only gets worse, man. And we do definitely have a drug problem in the Bay Area right now. The music is getting promoted to make it seem as if it's okay to use drugs. I've been guilty of it. And I won't come here and try to sugarcoat it or make it seem like, oh, I don't have nothing to do with these kids using drugs. I take responsibility for my part, but at the same time, I also go back and talk to these kids in seminars and let them know that it ain't just about this. It's about, you know, handling your business and staying a business minded as possible as you can.
Yeah, man, you know, I always go through this conversation or this debate with a lot of people, man, because when people say that, you know, blacks or Mexicans or it's only minorities or whatever doing all the bad shit, you know, as they say, I'm like, you know, if you switch the places, if you put all the white kids in the ghetto and have them grow up like that under those circumstances and you put the black kids you let them grow up wealthy or whatever, it will probably be the white kids who's doing all the bad shit, you feel me?
So it ain't got nothing.
No, I was trying to say that, but that's how it's usually pictured, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, minorities doing all, you know what I mean?
Right, they want to make it, because it goes back to America never wants to accept their mistakes, you know? Nobody wants the white America or the white regions of the world never want to accept the fact that they messed up and they did something wrong. So what they do, they come up with things to blame other people. They blame the drugs on blacks. Well, you flooded the community. How did the drugs get here? You know what I'm saying? They blame the black-on-black crime on the blacks. How did the guns get there? You know what I'm saying? Blacks don't make, ain't no black person ever made no gun. You know? Ecstasy. This is a drug that's been manufactured and has been used for a long time. And, you know what I'm saying? In white areas. And any other thing. Blacks AIDS. AIDS was a test program, and they start experimenting on blacks. They used to experiment on babies. So you know what I'm saying? They always give the blame to other people. Nobody ever wants to take the blame for the wrong parts. Us being the minority, us being those who went through the most, it's easy for them to say, this is why they doing it. Because they went through this, they did all this. They need that. And I mean, and it's a legitimate excuse, but at the end of the day, they are responsible for it. I'm like, come on, man, you can't blame us for just being caught in a way to where we have to survive. Blacks have been through survival mode their whole life. No other race would have went through slavery. No other race would have went through what blacks went through in the South. You know, we're survivors, man. We're survivors. And we will survive through anything. It just may take us a little bit longer. But for all the people out there and the young people in general, don't take the blame for what life has forced you to do. Realize that this is what life has forced you to do, and you have to make the best of your situation. However you do it, and whatever you do, just stay positive about doing it.
I feel you, man. Let's get to a more pleasant conversation, man. I wanted to ask you about your radio show, you know, KYLD, Wild 94.9. How did that start?
My radio show, man, it's crazy because when I put out the Nig Latin album, I put it out through this guy named Jazzy Jim, who's a program director. Who's a program director over at 94.9. Who's a program director over at 94.9. And my whole, well, like, when I was young, I used to tell him, like, man, Jim, man, I want my own, hold on.
Alright.
Call my Evan number, I'm on the phone. Hold on, oh, she forgot it. She didn't come up. Hello?
Yeah.
And so I always used to tell him, like, man, I just want my own radio show, man. I'd be crazy on the radio. It ends. I'll ask him, Monique Grammy. And I used to be like, man, I want my own radio show, man. I would love to have my own radio show. And when he came back, he was like, you still want your radio show? I was like, yeah, man. He was like, all right. I was just like, all right. So he made it happen for me. It was just like that easy. And I got that opportunity, man. I was just like, man, I'm finna be crazy on the radio. And it definitely helped out for a favor, man, because I get a chance to play people music who like, wouldn't have never been on radio. You know what I'm saying? I get a chance to look out for folks and talk about community problems, all types of stuff. Like, I got a real free, like, I could really do whatever I want to do on my show. And, and it's an opportunity because I'm a voice of the community. I get a chance to help people, to just talk crazy, to do whatever I want to do. And it's great. I love it.
Okay. And, you know, one time you had your brother on the show. I thought that was, you know, some real deep emotional shit. Can you tell us about that show?
Yeah, that was really emotional, man. That show was crazy. My brother had just got out of jail. And he had been going through a lot of stuff. Like I say, man, anytime you do, that'd be like 11 years straight. You feel me? And 11 years in the pen, man, there's so much could change when you get out of jail. And it's like, when he came home, he was just basically trying to get back that time that he spent. And I was telling him, like, bro, you'll never be able to get that time back, man. You'll never be able to get what you had back. You can have it in another form. You can get it in another form, but you'll never be able to go back to 95 and 96. The years is over, man. And he had been really living in, like, in the past, you know. And, he just got sad around the time. He was like, well, man, if I can't go back to how I had it, man, then I just don't want to live no more. And I was like, what? I was like, what'd you say? And it was just like, it had got to that point where he was just so frustrated with life. And what I did was, I was like, man, I want you to be on my show because I want you to see that you're not the only person going through this, you know? There's people everywhere around the world going through the same thing that you're going through. It's people right here in our own community going through everything that you're going through. And what I want you to do is I want you to tell your story to these other people so you can touch them. You can help these other people out that's feeling the way you're feeling. They don't have a chance to get on the radio and talk to a big audience. They don't have a chance to have a little brother who is in a position to do, you know what I'm saying, to help people. So I wanted to get up there and tell him that he was important and that he was somebody, you know, and he had an opportunity to help people rather than just give up and, you know what I'm saying, and end it like that. And that interview really touched a lot of people. You know, like a lot of people was calling me and was hitting me and MySpacing me and just emailing me. I was like, dude, that was some of the realest shit I ever heard in life. And I wanted to let him know that I'm speaking from my heart. We was really up there crying. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was real grown-ass man tears. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it was tears of pain and it was tears of joy at the same time. The pain came from the things that we talked about of losing our dad, him losing his mom, and us just going through the losses that we went through. But the benediction was the blessing of being able to get that out, to say this and not be ashamed of what we went through. And it was a lot of people, man, that we were talking for that we didn't really even realize that we were talking for. And that was a blessing, man. I think that was one of my best shows ever.
Okay. Let's get back to your music, man. I want to talk to you about your album. Can you give us a little breakdown, you know, on a few tracks of the album and the overall sound of it?
Well, what I'm doing right now is, man, I've been having a few little talks with a lot of people and over at Atlantic. And right now, like the whole Atlantic thing, man, they really just, they cool. But I'm like, my main thing is, these major labels, man, they want you to, you know, they want you to sit back and wait on them and move when they move. And it's artists that do that. If you're going to be an artist like that, so be it to you. Me, I'm not going to be like that. So I told them, they don't want my album to come out till like October, right?
Right.
What I did, I was like, well, look, check this out. I'm going to drop an independent album, April 17th. You know, just to keep my buzz going, you feel me? Because I'm not finna sit back and wait on them to drop my album and be like, oh yeah, man, they said, well, I'm gonna come out this time and this time, and you'll never come out. So I'm gonna drop an independent album, April 17th. It's called The Baydestrian. It's gonna be crazy. It's gonna be it's basically just gonna be me getting a lot of stuff off my shoulders, getting stuff off my chest, and doing it for the Bay. That's gonna be like my Bay project. Then the Yellow Bus Rider comes out in November, and I'm just gonna stay busy, man. So I'm really just gonna drop two projects, and hey, man, whatever happens, happen. But they're not gonna have me idle sitting around waiting on them. So I'm just gonna. I got my own label, I got my own resources, and my own machine. So I'm able to do what I gotta do, you know, with my machine. And my machine is allowing me. They're allowing me to drop an album. Sell an album, say sell about 50,000 real quick, $50,000 at $7 a record. I mean, you do the math. Like Jay say, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. So when I go up in there, I'm like, look, dude, I could do this without y'all. I don't need y'all. Y'all want to get behind it or not?
But at the same time, you doing that might, you know, get them to drop your album sooner if you're able to create a buzz with that independent shit.
And that's what I'm saying. Because what they want to do, if they do that, they're going to be like, well, man, well, let us just drop this album, man. Summertime, man. We didn't know that this album was going to do that much. You know? Say that album does 50,000, 75,000. They're going to be pissed off because they wasn't involved in it. You know? And they're going to want to do whatever they got to do to get involved in it fast.
Hopefully it works out that way.
It's going to work out. I got a distribution deal through SMC to distribute my album. The Baydestrian. I'm going to go through SMC Montana, drop that album, and, man, just keep doing what I'm doing, man. I've never waited on nothing. No one has ever given me anything. I've had a blessed opportunity to meet some people that work very good with me, and we're just working, man. I ain't waiting around on nothing. Shit to happen, man. I'm moving. And that's what they that's why they respected me, and that's why they could continue to respect me, and they're gonna have to look me eye to eye and tell me what they gotta tell me.
Okay. So what producers are you gonna be working with on the album?
First of all, like I said, I got Sean T. Sean T's crazy. I got Drew B, who's E-40 Lil Son. He's like one of the, he's the future. Facsimilion, who created the whole super hypey sound. Let me see. Who else I got some beats from, cuz? Huh? Yeah, I said, Young L. Young L is the truth. Young L is, the dude who did Got My Vans On.
Yep.
Yeah, Young L is rule. He's ridiculous. I got some outside producers. I can't think right now.
I mean, you know, if you remember later on, you can have, your people email it to me or something so I can add it to the interview.
Okay, Jim Johnson. Like, Jim Johnson, he's from down south. He created, he did, like, all the Pretty Ricky stuff, and he's dope. Jim Johnson is really the truth. I got a lot of people doing some stuff, man.
What about guest appearances?
Snoop Dogg, Too Short, E-40, Pitbull, who else is on my album? Trey Songz.
Okay, so, you know, how did you pick the guests on your record? Did you pick artists that you want to have on there, or did you hear the music first, and, you know, then you were like, oh, I want to have this dude on here, or how did that work out?
I really like to work with artists that I like, you know? Some people use features and strategy and ways to market their album. Me, I just like people, like, the people that I got on my album are people that I like. You know, I want to work with them. It's always been a dream of mine to work with Snoop Dogg, you know? So when he gave me the opportunity, I just was like, for sure. Did one with him. Short, you know, Too Short. To the Bay is what Jay-Z is to the East Coast. You know,
shit, without Too Short, there wouldn't be no Jay-Z.
He's been, man, I'm glad somebody said that. I love the fact that, you know, me, Too Short has embraced me, man, like a little brother, man. And, like, I call him Pops and everything, man. Like, we talk every day. He just showed me some real shit, man, and some real life stuff, man. So, just the chance to work with him, man, you know, that's crazy, man. It's, the artist, man, you growing up, you like, I never would thought that I'd be kicking it with Short at his house, kicking it everywhere together. That's like a big move, man. And who else, man? E-40, a lot of these cats I grew up coming up listening to in the Bay, man. Like, just for them to embrace me the way they was, it's a beautiful thing, man. Like I said, I'm still just a humble dude, man. And I just love the fact that, I just love the fact, man, I'm getting the opportunity to work with these dudes. And, it is what it is, man. And, like, a lot of these dudes have embraced me. And, like, to answer the question, I just pick the people that I want to work with. I don't really do songs because somebody hella hot or it's a good feature. I do it, man, because I like these artists, and that's who I want to work with.
Okay. And, you know, are you planning on doing a nationwide tour, you know, after the album drops?
Shit, man, that's all up to the person who's involved, you know, with making blessings come true.
You know, you should be doing street shows, traveling in, rapping on top of the, you know, big-ass yellow bus, you know, Fabby style.
Yeah, that's what my dude told me. He said, man, you need to put the music in the bus and just hit the road. Just turn out, whip out a show anywhere.
Yep.
I'm like, so, I mean, like, you know, that shit is definitely an option that I'm willing to explore. And whatever they got for me, man, I'm taking it, man. I'm looking with my eyes a few steps ahead, but at the same time, just making sure I go step by step.
Okay. You know, FAB stands for Forever After Bread, right?
Yeah, Forever After Bread.
So how do you live by that day by day?
Just hustling, man. Every day I'm hustling, like Rick Ross say, man. man. Every day is like I'm putting myself in position to do something and get some, like, you know, make something happen somewhere. I just, that's what life is about, man. Set yourself up to be all right. You ain't gonna be a rapper forever, you know? So what you gotta realize is set yourself up to win after rap. You don't gotta be a rapper forever, but you can be in music business, you know? You can go from being a star to being a star maker. And what I do is every day, man, I set myself up to say, all right, what I'm gonna do? How can I generate something today? Can I get some money out of this today? If I'm gonna be on MySpace, I'm gonna be on MySpace because somebody wanna do a song with me, so I'm gonna find them and hit them up, you know?
Right.
And that's what life is about, man. Every day I'm trying to find something to make my quest of just hustling and getting money a little more easier and opening up opportunity for those around me. That's one thing that I'm real big on, man, because I come from a neighborhood, man, where it ain't no opportunity. You know what I'm talking about? You know, man, niggas don't got no opportunity, man.
Absolutely.
Cats ain't, they don't care, man. The care out here is so just, niggas do not care, man. So if you can open opportunity for cats, man, it's a blessing because niggas be like, man, I don't got nothing to do. So I be trying to put my dudes on, man, so they can hustle and stay out of the scene, man. Niggas is getting killed every day out here. I'm just trying to open up opportunity for my people. Don't got to do that, man.
Okay, and you know, you just mentioned MySpace. What do you think of the influence of sites like MySpace who've been, you know, giving a lot of people the opportunity to just connect with each other?
Man, MySpace then really took the music game to a whole different level, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't even really need radio that much no more. Like, with MySpace and YouTube and joints like that, the radio just don't, it's like, why I'm gonna fight for some radio airplay when I can just create my site and make it so big that everybody wants to go to my site? You know what I'm saying? You get a certain amount of plays a day, listens a day. That's huge. It's like you get a chance to work with somebody who you ain't never even, you be like, man, this ain't you. Say an up-and-coming artist, they go on their MySpace, they be like, this really fat? They hit me, and I hit them back, and they call me and they be like, this is really you? Like, that's crazy. Like, me and Lil Jon Converse on our MySpaces, and it really be him, because I done been at his house and seen him on MySpace. Like, me and Too Short, people are really on, this is really like the networking game. This is really for real. MySpace is huge, man. Good looking, Tom.
I feel you. Musically, who you feeling right now from the Bay in L.A.? Oh, not just L.A., like San Diego, you know, whatever, just California.
Mitchie Slick. Diego, that's my dude. I love Mitch. Glasses Malone. Let me see. Eddie P., Eddie Projects. He's from Oakland. He on fire right now. Beta Weeda. I love Messy Marsh. Love Keith.
Yeah, I know Problem.
Yeah, Problem's gonna be a problem. Like, I was listening to his mixtape, I was like, damn, that fool was gassing. You feel me?
What about Clyde Carson?
Oh, I love Clyde. Clyde, like, I like Clyde because Clyde is a hustler. You feel me? Clyde is a hustler, man. I've been watching Clyde. Me and Clyde came under the same roof together, you know what I'm saying? So, for me to just see what he's been doing all this time, and for him to see what I've been doing, we really respect each other's grind, man, because we was doing that at a time nobody gave a shit about what the Bay was doing. You know what I'm saying? Us being two cats from Oakland, nobody cared about what we was doing, man, but we've been grinding so hard. They've been on our line. They've been like, man, y'all niggas is really doing what y'all doing, man. So, Clyde is dope. And now he got that hot single, the two-step.
Yep. produced by Nephew.
So, I mean, man, I take my hat off to that dude, man. Dude is a dick.
Well, what about your boy?
Who?
Your boy.
That's my little brother, man. I love your boy. Me and him got so much history together. And just kicking it and chilling. And when people were taking on him, like, I would call him and just be like, bro, don't even worry about it, bro. You feel me? Like, bro, they gonna do what they do, bro. You make an opportunity for yourself. Don't let them slow you down.
And
like I say, man, people go hate, man. Everybody was trying to hate on him, like, oh man, he moved to LA and he hella Hollywood now. He don't care about us.
He worked with Kevin Federline.
Yeah, I'm like, dude is trying to open up his opportunity, man. You can't stay somewhere forever if it ain't working for you. Keep it going, man. Move on. And my hat goes off to him because he didn't went down there and became, you know, he did him, man. I love him, man.
Yeah, he got this hot-ass new mixtape out there with DJ Ski that just dropped, like, 2 days ago.
Man, the boy is working, man. Every day he in the studio, man. How could you be mad at somebody that's working on their craft, man? They doing what they doing. They taking their talent to another level. Everybody that's doing that, man, you got to love them. Don't be mad at them. How could you be mad at them? It ain't... I really... I mess with a lot of Bay cats, man. It's like... I just respect cats that grind, man. If you grind and grind, man, don't let nobody stop you. I done been an underdog my whole life, you know? And I'm going to continue to have that underdog mentality. Keep grinding.
What do you think of, you know, the recent arrest of DJ Drama and Cannon? Do you think that's going to affect the mixtape industry?
No, not at all. That's just going to make it even more.
But, you know, a lot of sites already pulled all the mixtapes off their sites, and, you know, a lot of people scared right now. Man, I think, you know, we covered pretty much everything. You know, is there anything else that you'd like to let everybody know?
I got a lot of articles and a lot of interviews that don't really know that I have a lot of political involvement, like, in my community. Like, I'm very politically based. I'm on the mayor candidate. Like, I was running for the mayor. I supported him in his whole campaign. I was one of the main voices in supporting him to make change in my community. And what I mean is, you got to be able to be a part of your community, and everybody talks about change. You have to be able to be a part of that change. So I'm with the new mayor, and I'm with everything that's got going on. And so my political involvement in my community is so big that people get so caught up in the musical side, and they don't ever realize the other stuff that I'm doing behind that. We do Silence the Violence tours. We do free shows for the kids in the community. Every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, all the holidays, we go give out food and give out presents to the kids at the youth centers and these group homes. And I'm not doing that, nor am I saying that to say, okay, I'm giving all this out. Support me. What I'm doing is I'm showing people that it's bigger than artistry. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, I'm a humanitarian and I care about what's going on in my community and my, you know what I'm saying, and my young peers. So... And that's one of my main importance, man, to save lives. If I can save a life through my music, if one person comes to me and say, man, you changed my life and make me want to do something positive, my job is done, man. I've been blessed. I've been blessed to change a life. That's all it's about.